We will get started, and as you know, the quarter is winding down, so this is my last class, and we're going to get right up to basically his
crucifixion, so it's probably a good
stopping point anyway
for a new age. For the
next time, we'll pick back up on this. There's some points I want to get to today, and so
we might move quickly through some of this, but just to recap, we had talked a little bit about
what the apostles were hearing and what they were seeing, and whether they were making sense of that or understanding it, and for the most part, they probably weren't. I mean, there were aspects of it that they got.
We talked about how the disciples had met up in the upper room, and some of those things that were happening with the Passover meal. And so that led us to, we stopped in Luke chapter 22, of course, a lot of this being recorded in the Gospels, about some of the items that we find in Luke just prior to Jesus agonizing in the garden. And some of those things that are not recorded in Matthew and in Mark, only Luke records, which is interesting because we do find some details in Luke nearing the end of his life that we see only in Luke that we didn't see in the others. We had just read in Luke chapter 22, and if you want to go with me, we'll be back and forth a little bit out of Luke. But Luke chapter 22 and verse 23 says, "Then they began to question among themselves which of them it was who would do this thing." And if you remember, we're talking about who was going to betray him. They had just asked, you know, at the supper, "Hey, who, you know, is it me? Is it I?" And of course, he says, "It's he who dips with me." And so then we had made comment. Of course, we're going to go on to verse 24. But right after this scenario, and I think this is interesting timing, but it says, "But there was a rivalry among them as to which of them should be considered the greatest." Now, this is not the first time we had seen them argue about who was the greatest. But seemingly, I think this reminds us that their head wasn't exactly where it needed to be. And here he is trying to tell them some very important thing. We've got this institution, Lord's Supper, and yet they're now arguing about who the greatest is. So we have this dispute here, and of course,
he had the confidence that he would actually come back to him. So the passage in Hebrews that stood out to me was talking about Jesus and his power being greater than that. The Old Testament says, "Therefore he is able to save to the uttermost those who come to God through him, since he always lives to make intercession for them." So basically, keying on the fact that, you know, Christ, part of Christ's purpose is to make intercession for us. And that's prayers. Christ is praying for Peter then, and he's praying for us now to the Father, so that we will be saved to the uttermost.
That's a great point, and it's the next point I had. And I don't want to take the whole class period for this. I think we could, but quickly, so Jesus, I mean, we have the verse here saying that I prayed for you that your faith should not fail. Did Peter's faith fail? It did. It did fail. So why, if even Jesus prayed for him, how did it fail? How do we rectify that, knowing that we are supposed to pray for things and we know that they may not all come to fruition, but here we have Christ saying, "I prayed for you that your faith wouldn't fail," but and I think we have a perfect explanation, but what do you think about this?
God also wants everyone to come to repentance, but not everyone does.
It's true. Okay, that's a good point.
His faith failed temporarily.
That's the point. That's the point I'm getting at. Yeah, it did. It failed temporarily. Was Peter great at times and great in life, especially after this? And I think, you know, that's the point that I want to make is that we're all going to make mistakes. And to Eric's point, I think Christ is making intercession for us. And he is prayerful for all of us that none of us should perish. But, you know, through this experience that Peter went through, and there's a difference. What did Judas experience and how did he handle that versus how did Peter experience his failure and his faults? And I think those are huge learning lessons for us. Two completely different routes that we can take. Both mistakes, both sins. But Judas had an opportunity to rectify that and correct course and have a great ever after, if you will. And he didn't do it. Yeah.
Another thing he's given us now is the Holy Spirit. The Spirit strengthens. It's very likely that Christ continues to pray, but at the time they didn't have the Spirit.
Yeah.
We can quench the Spirit as well and fail, but we've been given power from the Spirit.
Yeah. Yeah, they had Jesus with them, and that at the time was their spirit. But again, and I think there's another lesson here, is that Satan is very powerful. He always has been and always will be. And it's a great reminder for us that we have to be on guard, because here's a perfect example of somebody who was very, very close to him and said, "There's no way. I'm going to go down with you. I will fight to the death with you. I'm going to do everything." And he's saying this thing, and not hours later, he is denying him. So we know, though, that Peter became a very influential leader in the church, and he was successful at spreading the gospel and did a lot of the great things that he did. But here was a moment where it was not his best moment. And what Satan meant for the bad and was going to do everything he could to sift them as wheat, had an impact. And some were able to persevere and press on, and others weren't. Yes.
You know, two things here. The first is, this is now the second time that we have seen Satan request to be able to tempt someone.
Job.
The other time was in Job.
Yeah.
And that sort of tells us something about what God does for us. He protects us to the degree that he has put some limitations on Satan.
Yeah.
Satan has to ask. And then the second thing is, Jesus says, when you have returned to me. So Jesus knew that Peter would be able to overcome this.
Yeah.
Just like God knew that Job would be able to overcome. And so this kind of speaks to the verse that talks about how there's no temptation. It's too great. We're not going to be able to overcome.
Yeah.
God protects us from those kinds of temptations.
Yep. That's a great point. And would have had the same protection for Judas. I mean, that all applied. But some are going to seek his assistance with being able to handle those temptations, and others aren't. And clearly, again, that's the two main differences. Okay, well, I wanted to take some time. We had Jesus' struggle in Gethsemane, and I wanted to look at some of those key points that we find throughout those Gospels while he was agonizing in the garden. So will someone turn to Luke chapter 22? We're there, but verse 39. And then someone else go to Mark chapter 14. And if you'll hold your finger in Mark chapter 14, I'll have you read a few verses. And then someone go to Matthew 26. And those three areas, we should be able to kind of nail all the things that I want to do. So here we have Jesus going in the Mount of Olives. Somebody read Luke 22, verse 39.
Jesus went out, as usual, to the Mount of Olives, and his disciples followed him.
Okay. So here we have him going to the Mount of Olives, his disciples following him. Someone read 14 and 32 of Mark. Mark 14, 32. Should be a similar account about him going to the Garden of Gethsemane.
Then they came to a place which was named Gethsemane, and he said to his disciples, "Sit here while I pray."
Okay, and then will you read 33 as well? Who did he take with him?
Took Peter, James, and John.
Okay, so here we have, and I'm just going through this just so we can kind of get this picture in our mind of who was with him, what was he going through. I think it's important that he knows exactly what's getting ready to happen. And we talked about this, I think, in our last couple of class periods, that most of us wouldn't want to know how we're going to die, and especially maybe when and, those events, but he knew these things, and here he is, he's deeply troubled. He goes to the Garden of Gethsemane, or Mount of Olives, and he's got Peter, James, and John with him, so I want us to be thinking about those. And then, Eric, while you're still there, will you read verse 34, if you are? Mark 14:34. Oh, you did. You did 33 and 34. Oops. Oh, sorry, you turned. It's okay.
14:33.
Yeah, 34.
He said to them, "My soul is exceedingly sorrowful, even to death. Stay here and watch."
Okay. And I only wanted to read that extra verse there, just again to paint the picture. His soul is sorrowful. He's telling them these things, and yet we're going to see what they struggle with. Somebody read Matthew 26:38. That should be similar.
Then he said to them, "My soul is overwhelmed with sorrow to the point of death. Stay here and keep watch for me."
Okay.
Keep watch with me.
Okay. So, you know, here he's got his closest confidants. He knows exactly what's going on. He's overwhelmed, you know. Think back to last week. Some of you may have at work been overwhelmed. I had a moment of being overwhelmed with projects. And, you know, you look for those that can help you through some of those things. He's got his people here with him that he feels are going to help him through these tough times. He's in sorrow. He says, even to the point of death. I mean, he is trying to illustrate and paint this picture and really get them to understand what's going on and what's going to happen. Please keep watch with me. And then, of course, when they reach the garden, let's see here. Luke 22 and verse 40. Is anybody still there? Karen, were you there? Can you read verse 40?
On reaching the place, he said to them, "Pray that you will not fall into temptation."
Okay. I think this is interesting. You know, he has reminded them of this before. And of course, in Mark, we can read the same thing where he is telling them, "Pray that you don't enter into temptation." You know, I think this is a good reminder for us. I mean, that's a pretty simple statement. But how many of us pray that we will not be led into temptation? You know, I know I've had some conversations with individuals here that have, we have jobs that whether it's drinking events or whatever, prayerful that we wouldn't be led into a temptation. And here he is reminding his disciples here, pray about that. Be prayerful right now that you're not going to be led into temptation. And then, let's see. So, Karen, you're still in Luke 22. Will you read 42?
"Father, if you are willing, take this cup from me, yet not my will, but yours be done."
Okay. And so all of this going on, and he knows what's upon him, and yet he is still looking to the Father's will. Even though he is saying, hey, and I'm putting it in Clayton's words, but if it's possible that I don't have to go through this, you know, please let it happen. But I'm sure it is, and it's going to happen. I mean, he knows, but he still is willing to do the Father's will. And I think that's important. Not my will, but your will. And, you know, all of these things, this is a prayer. I mean, what we're reading here, yeah, it seems like his words, but he's praying these things. I mean, he's speaking with the Father, so he's in prayer here. All good things for us to remember. Who is in Matthew 26? 26 and 39. Will somebody read that?
"He went a little further and fell on his face and prayed, saying, Oh, my Father, if it is possible, let this cup pass from me. Nevertheless, not as I will, but as you will."
Okay. So, a little bit different wording, but here he is continuing to be prayerful, still asking for the Father's will, which is important. Mark 14, I'm sorry.
This is showing us the physical side.
That's right.
He felt just like we did.
That's right.
And
yeah.
He dreaded that just like
Yeah, did. Yeah, he wasn't looking forward to that any more than any of us would be looking forward to it. But, and you know, and to your point, this is the human side of him that we're getting to see, but what was he doing? A lot of us turn to either ourselves or maybe friends or whoever. Who's he turning to? He's turning to his Father. And he's turning to him in prayer. So just a great reminder for us that when we are feeling overwhelmed, who better to go to? Who better to go to talk about that? And, you know, there is nothing that says that while you're feeling overwhelmed in the middle of work or you're feeling overwhelmed in the middle of whatever you're doing, not to take time to pray. Okay, Mark 14 and 36. Will somebody read that if you had your finger there? Okay, so again, very, very similar things. He knows that it's the Father's will, but asking that, you know, if that cup can pass, great, but I understand that, you know, I want your will to happen, not mine. So, yes, my human side does not want to go through with this, but please, you know, help me here and let it be your will. So then he returns, and what's he returned to? So someone in Matthew 26, read verse 40.
"And he cometh unto the disciples and findeth them asleep, and he said unto Peter, What could you not watch with me 1 hour?"
Okay. He says, what, 1 hour? Is that how, 1 hour. So, you know, imagine, and I know this is kind of hard to put in perspective, and we realize at this time they had to be tired and a lot going on, but imagine me telling you, because let's put this in proper perspective. I'm in the hospital, and I'm telling you, or the doctor's telling you, and you're there with you, saying, he's going to die shortly, probably tonight. And I look at Ben, and I say, Ben, can you just pray with me? You know, and I know it's a little out of context, but will you just pray with me? Because I, you know, this is really tough for me, and I'm having trouble handling this, and I don't want to die, but I know that it's okay that I die. And I look, and Ben's like, we kind of chuckle, but I mean, that's how we have to really think about this. I mean, this is exactly what's going on here, and it's. You know, it's kind of tough for us to put that in perspective sometimes and realize that he totally gets all of this. I mean, he is grasping the gravity of what is getting ready to happen, and he's just looking for his closest friends to help him through this. And their physical side is letting them down, you know. And it's got to be tough.
Just saying this casually.
What's that?
He's not just saying
no,
this
no.
He's in distress.
I'm overwhelmed, even to the point of death. I mean, He's saying this to get their attention. You know, I was thinking about this. How many times do you think Christ said to his closest followers, I'm overwhelmed? I don't know that I would think that would have ever maybe come out. I mean, I think there might have been tough times. I think there might have been some fearful times. But we don't really read in the scriptures where he is, I don't know, maybe I'm missing it, fearful, or he's you know, feeling like his life is in jeopardy, and so he contends with them that this is what's going to happen. So I think this would be something brand new. I mean, this would be something you would think would get their attention. So, yes, I agree, Kevin. I mean, this isn't just in passing that, hey, this is kind of a tough time, and, you know, as he's done in the past, the end is near. No, he's saying, I'm overwhelmed, and I am sorrowful, and I'm, you know, distressed.
You know, it's hard to imagine. What kind of a person would Ben be if he wouldn't pray for you? What kind of a person would not pray for a fellow man that was dying in one of these?
Right.
And that's why Jesus said, what?
Yeah, yeah.
You couldn't even stay awake 1 hour?
1 hour. 1 hour.
I think the difference there is that I'm not sure if the apostles, I don't think it clicked that Jesus was getting ready to die.
No different. Yeah.
He knew.
He did.
I don't think they knew.
No different than at the supper. You know, there were some things said at the supper. I mean, why would you be arguing about me, you, and Eric? Now, who's the great? No, come on, really, I'm better. Would you be really arguing that point at the institution of the supper if we really got it? And that's the point, is they didn't really get it, but it's still... I know. Well, but is that any different?
They're not accepting, you know, sometimes our mind won't let us accept bad things. We know bad things.
Sure. Yeah.
It's not going to happen.
Yeah.
But I don't know. It's hard to fathom.
It is. But you know, is it any different though than today? He tells us he's coming back. And are we ready? I mean, are we taking that with that same sense of urgency, or are we doing the same thing they were? Oh yeah, he's saying they're coming, and he's set. I mean, it's easy for us all to do. I mean, it shouldn't be, but it can be. And it was clearly here. And that's not to discredit. They probably were crazy exhausted, and maybe they were sleep deprived. But 1 hour, you know, 1 hour, you could see him saying this. All right, let's see here. Mark 14 and 37. Will somebody read that? I don't think we read that one yet. Probably the same thing. Mark 14, 37. Yeah, you almost see him poking him. Like Ben's by my bedside, and I look over. I'm thinking he's going to lead a prayer, and I have to poke him, nudge him. Ben, you know, just lead a prayer here. What's going on? Not 1 hour. You just couldn't stay and pray with me for 1 hour. And then it's not bad enough that happens. So you would think, if I say to Ben, and I kind of put him on the hot seat, and I say, Ben, you know, seriously, you can't pray with me for just a little bit? And he's snoring. So you would think, oh man, I'm so sorry. And you'd think he'd get his act together, but do they get their act together here? No. So he goes, and there's a second, and there's a third time where he finds these three sleeping. And then we see the angel from a heaven appear to him and strengthen him. So Luke 22:43, and I've got that. Then an angel appeared to him from heaven, strengthening him. I think this is interesting. You know, we've all read these stories a ton. I don't know for whatever reason if I remember that verse. I mean, I know I've read it, but you know, here we have this him asking for this cup to be removed, and he's saying, "Not your will, but my will." And yet, then we find an angel appearing to him and strengthening him. And what do you think this strengthening him is? Physically, spiritual? I think spiritual. Just helping him to get through it. You know, haven't you felt comforted at weird times? Maybe you were prayerful about a tough time you were going through, and you just all of a sudden felt comforted. What is that? That's being taken care of. That's, we didn't have an angel appear to us, but that's the Spirit. You know, that's God comforting us, you know, through. So I think that's him receiving strength here. And I don't think we're any different. I mean, we may not have an angel appear to us, but we will receive strength when we ask for it. And I think that comfort happened.
We always have that Spirit within us.
That's right.
The comforter.
Yeah, that peace. Where do we get that peace that surpasses all understanding? Same way here. And he may have needed that, Ben.
We're stringing a couple of things together here.
Okay.
Have you ever wondered maybe what is actually happening here is God is giving Jesus the answer to this prayer. Jesus prays, you know, if it's your will.
Yeah. It is my will, and here I'm going to help you.
So, you know, angels are messengers. You know, I don't know, does God send a messenger down to Jesus and say, listen, we're going to go through with this. Remember, this was
the plan. This is the plan.
You know,
yeah.
If you do it, you know, yeah. I don't know. Is that what's happened here? I mean, surely there's a conversation that takes place.
Possibly. Well, this is the tough part, because we know Christ is a heavenly spiritual being, but he is man, as you remind us here. He's man at this time. And what would all mankind want to do? I remember Dad at church saying, "You're getting a spanking when we get home." And you're thinking, "Oh, I don't want a spanking." And you did everything in your power, I did, to deter him, to get him to think about anything but the fact that when we get home and get a spank. I remember deflecting conversations and bringing up all kinds of stupid stuff, thinking, okay, if I can just get him to not remember this, like he's going to forget. And when we got home, I get a spanking. So I would try to get out of that. That's what's happening here. I mean, that's really what's happening here, Eddie and then Kevin. That's a good point. So maybe he didn't fully understand. He knew the plan, but maybe he didn't know.
He just thought, maybe there's a way out of this, you know, another way that we can do this plan.
Which is why probably we're reminded multiple times by his statements, your will, not mine. So even though I'm going to ask you, I totally get it. It's your will. That's a good point, Eddie. Kevin?
You just read the scripture about the angel appearing to him and comforting him.
Yeah.
It was just a few hours later he was on the cross. Said,
why have you forsaken me?
Well, this verse is that you forsaken me.
That's right. Yep. It's good.
Also, the verse after that you just got to read reminds us of pain and agony, he prayed more earnestly, and the sweat was more like a great drop of blood falling to the ground.
That's my very next verse. Yeah, no, you're headed there. And that's, he's praying again. He's prayerful again. And guess what? Luke is the only one that records about this, you know, his sweat being like great drops of blood. It's kind of interesting. Luke gives us some details that we just don't get to see anywhere else. That visual for us kind of puts in perspective. I mean, this was, to Kevin's point, this wasn't just in passing. I mean, he is down. This is so agonizing to think about. And I can't believe this is upon me, but I am sweating literally as drops of blood. That's how bad this is. How bad this is. Were you going to say something else, though, Linda? I didn't mean to cut you off.
No, that's right.
Yeah. That verse is my very next bullet. But only Luke records that, and we have that, and we read that, and it's interesting. It gives us some a visual there that we.
Then after doing that, then he goes to his disciples, sweating so bad and worrying about it, and then he finds
him asleep again. Yeah, that's good.
This gives us a very strong reason to have faith that Jesus, we can do all things through Him who strengthens us.
Yeah. Yep. And another reminder, is it going to go like we want? I mean, there's times where we think we know and we pray earnestly for whatever. It may not, just like Christ here. He was praying and, you know, we see some of His prayer because it's recorded for us. But, I mean, He didn't want that to, He didn't want to die. He didn't want to be crucified. But at the end, that was the plan and that's what ended up happening. And, doesn't always go the way we think. And here, Christ being human, didn't go exactly like maybe He would have liked to have gotten out of it, but He didn't. And then we read on, of course, to Linda's point, and she's just following along, but verse 45 says, when He rose up from the prayer, so this is Him praying again, He rises back up, and here we have been again, and had come to His disciples, He found them sleeping from sorrow. Now, you know, was this too much? That's an interesting statement. He found them sleeping from sorrow. Have you ever been just so stressed, worried, anxious about something, you finally go to sleep and you're out? I mean, that's an interesting statement. He found them sleeping from sorrow. It's interesting. Luke, let's see here. I want to make sure. Was it Luke that had recorded? So did he come to them and they were sleeping? I thought Luke was the one that only recorded them sleeping once. I could be wrong about that, so I need to be careful. But and maybe I jotted it down wrong, but I was thinking Luke was the one that only had it once. So somebody go to Matthew, somebody that had their finger in Matthew 26, read verse 46.
Arise, let us be going. Behold, He is at hand.
Okay, so the betrayer is at hand. Someone in Mark 14 and 42. Okay, so the betrayer is at hand. We've got to get up and go right now. You know, it makes you wonder, if they didn't get it for these hours leading up, do they finally get it now? Hey, we got to go. The betrayer is at hand. You would think they finally would probably put two and two together. And if they didn't at this point, it's not going to take them long and they're going to get it. But so just as Jesus was speaking, Judas, one of the 12, appeared with what Mark calls a crowd. We've read about this where there was a crowd armed with swords and clubs. The crowd was sent from the same three groups that we have talked about leading up to this. So we talked about this the last two consecutive weeks that... Who are those three groups? Chief priests, teachers of law, scribes, Pharisees, elders. I mean, it's said different ways, different places, but that's the three groups. It's the same three groups that were trying to cause Him grief and trip Him up and do all these things. And guess what? Same three groups that we see here. Of course, what was the signal that Judas was going to give? It was a kiss. We talked about that a little bit. I can't remember, was it you, Eric, that sucked me in last week and we ended up getting ahead of my notes, or maybe it was Ben, but...
I wasn't here last week.
Oh, yeah, that's right, okay, it was Eric, yeah, sucked me in. But, you know, it was good. I mean, it was where we were going, but, you know, it was what Judas did. It was him showing that outward sign. Of course, we see that Mark records Jesus being seized and arrested at that point. And then, of course, we have one standing nearby who gets his ear cut off. And what does Jesus ask them? What was the question He asked after that happened? You can paraphrase it, but what am I leading a rebellion? Am I leading a rebellion here that you come out with swords and clubs to capture me? And we talked a little bit about this, but did they really need someone to point Him out? Probably not, but it was dark. I mean, there's a couple things that were going on because we talked about the fact that, and if you didn't remember this, but they weren't going to do this in daylight. Why weren't they going to do it in daylight? What was the one thing we talked about? What were they fearful?
Afraid of people.
Yeah, they were afraid for their own lives.
And you know, the other thing that might be happening there is it wasn't the chief priests and elders and all of those people. It wasn't them who were coming out.
They had people.
They had people. And it's almost like these people, you know, they're the muscle. They don't really know.
They're just the rough crew.
They don't know who Jesus is.
Yeah.
So that seems to me why Judas
need to give him a kiss. Yeah, yeah. And we talked about that, you know, a lot of evil deeds are done in the evening and or at night in the dark. And it was dark, you know. Maybe you needed that extra little confirmation. Let's just not make a slip up here. Let's make sure I give a kiss to the one who you need to arrest. And, of course, they were at a kind of a remote location. We talked about that, too. You know, why did they not do it where he was at every day? Out in the, you know, in the temple and every... Well, there's a reason. They did this in a remote area because they were fearful of their own lives. And for sure, those three groups were. And to Ben's point, who did the three groups send? Well, it wasn't necessarily them. They sent some people in their stead, just in case this doesn't go, you know, right. Which isn't that what people of money do? They had the money and stature, so we're going to send some people to take care of this for them. And then I'm in Luke chapter 22, so verses 52 and 53. Then Jesus said to the chief priests, captains of the temple, and the elders who had come to him, Have you come out as against a robber with swords and clubs? When I was with you daily in the temple, you did not try to seize me, but this is your hour and the power of darkness. What an interesting last statement there. This is your hour and the power of darkness. I find it interesting that this statement, you know, brings things full circle. You know, when we read in Luke where Satan entered Judas initially, and we have that, you know, then Judas went to the chief priests and discussed how he might betray him and, you know, for how much money that he would do that for. And then Luke records here later the same chapter where Jesus mentions the darkness reigns. You know, Judas obviously came under the influence of Satan. And to me, this recording right here acknowledges that fact. I mean, he was under Satan's influence for sure. And he chose a time when darkness was reigning. What an interesting point or comment. Darkness was reigning at this time and under the influence of the Prince of Darkness.
I think actually he's actually talking to Satan, I think, here. He's saying,
probably.
Okay, Satan, this is it. You're gonna get to kill me.
Yeah.
And that's what Satan wants.
Yeah, this is your time.
Let's get him out of the picture. And then all of this is just setting up, of course, the resurrection and just completely put that down and destroy what Satan did.
Yeah. Yep. Yep, it's that time. And he was in charge. Let's see here. You know, in John chapter 18, it's recorded there. There was a detachment of soldiers, and the Pharisees were specifically mentioned there. So you have this detachment of soldiers. You have Pharisees there. We looked at Matthew's account, which calls this a large group, and this large group was sent by who? Chief priests and the elders of the people. That's what it says. Mark chapter 14 expands in the description of not only just a crowd, but a crowd sent from the chief priests, the teachers of the law, and the elders. So those specific things were spoken about. Who sent these people out? Chief priests, elders, teachers of the law. And so these three groups were there for his arrest, or a representation of those three groups. Those three groups were the people that schemed to have him arrested, and we know why they did it, when they did it. Is anybody still in Matthew chapter 6? If not, I can turn it real quick, and we're going to close right here. Matthew 6, and I'm just going to read, Matthew 26, I'm sorry. Matthew 26, verses 3 through 5. It says, "Then the chief priests, the scribes, and the elders of the people assembled at the palace of the high priest, who called Caiaphas, and plotted to take Jesus by trickery and kill him. But they said, not during the feast, lest there be an uproar amongst the people." This is to your point. We don't want to do this during a high traffic time because, hey, there's going to be an uproar, and I'm scared half to death, we may die. We don't want that to happen. So, but you know, interesting time going on right here. This plotting to take Jesus, and so to Dwayne's point, this is Satan. I mean, this whole plotting, conniving, you know, plan, it came from him. He was the mastermind, and it's no different than today. He plots these things to enter, and he has workers in this world that we're in today. Okay, any questions or comments while everybody's coming up?
Yeah. It wasn't nearly complete.
Yeah.
The ministry of Jesus was also in his resurrection, as was made known a minute ago. But, you know, that was still probably the most powerful piece of it was still to come.
Yeah. Good point. Okay, we'll take a quick break, and I appreciate your help this quarter, and I don't know who our teacher is next quarter, but thanks for